All right, welcome to the Tiny Plastic People podcast. It is a podcast about tiny plastic people. This week, it's this week or month or whatever fabric of time it, this is.
This time unit.
This time unit. I'm James, and I'm joined by Pete.
Hello.
And I'm joined by JD.
Yeah.
Nice. And as usual, we're going to have a little podcast about the things that we've done been doing, and then we're going to talk about some things about El Hobbio, etc. So, let's get into it. Let's start with JD. What on earth have you been up to this week or month, etc.?
I'm going to say this week could be a bit of a slim time frame.
Yeah.
Luckily, we've got a whole time unit to...
Well, we can work in any time unit explore. You want to.
Well, I think the most recent hobby stuff I've been doing is I did put a bunch of paint on some Space Marines and then didn't finish those Space Marines.
These your Blood Ravens?
Yeah. Yeah, that was for our meetup in Scotland, which I then didn't get to play 40k at.
Excellent.
That's the typical thing of just preparing stuff and then not getting to use it.
Yeah, I could have left my entire really useful box at home because everything in it I didn't use. And yeah, this last 2 weeks I've been on and off building a Militarum combat patrol, so the new Cadian stuff. That's been really good. Mm-hmm. I think I'm just gonna do those in like the traditional Cadian colours, you know, the green and khaki.
Military green.
Yeah. And then,
can I suggest each picking a base coat colour that you have to do like 3 to 4 coats of for each armour panel?
You absolutely cannot, instrument. Because I'm going to be using contrast, obviously.
Oh, well, that's cheating.
Why would you not do that?
Because I can't paint with contrast very well, but that's my own hang-ups.
Yeah, I've also picked up a few more knights because let it never be said that I'm not an absolute hog for more projects.
Slash meta chaser.
See, I'd already committed to doing a full knight's army before that. So it doesn't count. Also, yeah, my other 40k army is going to be guard, so it's fine.
Got one on each side of the divide, I suppose, haven't you?
Yeah, they balance out. They meet in the middle. Yeah, that was about it, really, other than going to our Scotland meetup, that was, yeah. But we were all there. We know what that was like.
Yeah, but the idea is that we inform the listeners about that thing. But maybe what we'll do is we'll talk about the meetup after we've talked about our regular hobby thing.
That's a good
idea.
There
we go. Planning on the fly. Here we go. We'll squeeze more content out of JD.
Whether he wants to or not.
All right, is that you done then, JD?
That is me done for now. Yeah,
you did get that big old. Was it the Dominus Knight or the Valiant?
Yeah. Well, it's the put on my nerd glasses. The Valiant is a type of Dominus Knight.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Much as a Paladin is a type of Questorian.
Exactly,
knight.
Peter.
Oh God,
Jesus, James, come on!
I'm gonna hand in my nerd card. Sorry, apologies. Yeah. Right, well, if you're so knowledgeable about Questorus Knight, Pete, why don't you tell us what you've been up to or you're currently up to right now?
Well, currently I'm staring at a Lamenta Space Marine that I'm painting because, excitingly, our lovely community is planning a Badab Wars kill team event at some point in the unspecified future. And for some reason, that has really tickled my fancy. I was going to say something much worse. It's tickled my fancy. And now I've gone from not really being interested in doing it at all to definitely painting at least 2 kill teams for it with different chapters. Because there's something that I really like about just recreating things, and that will tie into my point later.
Oh, okay.
My topic.
We'll keep that on the back burner then.
Yeah.
But how is painting? How is painting a Lamenta? How's all them checks?
So infamously, Lamentas are like horrible to paint. Like if you Google like how to paint a Lamenta, half the results are like Reddit threads saying, "I hate myself, so I want to paint Lamentas," or you know something like that. And I think the reason for that is because they have a horrible chapter logo, which is a checkerboard with a circle in the middle, which has a little heart that is crying a little tear of blood, on it, that you can't really get transfers for unless you go very customized for it. So you have to paint that yourself. And the rest of them is yellow, which is infamously quite horrible to paint. But I've not found it too awful. I mean, the logo is awkward to paint. Like, freehanding is always awkward, in my opinion. But you don't have to be that sort of perfect about it to get something that looks decent, I think. Like, if you got the vibes right, then it really does do the job. And when it comes to yellow, I'm literally just using... Let's look at the Avalon Sunset, wash it, layer it again, and then made up a sort of highlight of, I think it's half Screaming Skull and half Aerial Yellow, to pick out the sort of raised areas, and that's pretty much it. And it's come out okay. I'm pretty pleased with it.
I saw it on the Instagram. I thought it was good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Check out my Insta, guys.
Hell yeah.
That's at Fienya, Fienyaa. I got it right that time. But yeah, it's not too bad. Maybe it's just because I've been, you know, painting fuckloads of models for probably 7 to 8 years now, but it's fine. There was something else I was going to say, and it's gone now.
You've been doing some of the gaming.
Yes, gaming. I've been playing a lot of different games. A lot of new 40K, because obviously that's the de rigueur thing. So we had our Scotland meetup. I played some Adeptus Titanicus, which I hadn't played for ages, I think before lockdown. And that is always an absolute blast to play. I played a game against Kara, who had not played before, and she absolutely demolished me. I think I didn't kill a single one of her Titans, but it's always fun because, you know, whenever a Titan dies, it does stupid shit, and if you're lucky, the stupid shit just keeps on happening, and it did. I played a couple of games of 40K, always fun. Put my Tyranids out on the table. And you can elucidate on this as well, James. We also played a special miniatureless game called Kriegsspiel.
Hell yeah,
which is a war game from the 19th century.
It's what all the cool kids are playing these days.
Well, it's retro, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, Prussian vibes for teens. It doesn't sound very good, actually. I don't want to encourage that. But, it was good fun. It was good fun. We were tasked to be generals in the Russo-Japanese War of 1905?
Yeah.
4 or 5?
A war I have no knowledge about, by the way.
I am famously a war guy, so I at least knew something. Probably should be infamously, not famously, but yeah. You were on the Russian side, weren't you? I was on the Japanese side.
I was on the Russian side, yeah.
You were on the Russian side, I can tell you that for 100% sure.
Yeah.
And it was run by one of our lovely community members, Drew, who I think was probably the perfect person to do this sort of thing. It was almost like it was role-playing meets wargaming. In the sense that it was quite loose in terms of like what you were doing in it. It was quite open-ended.
Yeah, I didn't realise quite how open-ended it was going to be. I
well,
thought there
indeed,
was going to be more rules, but it seemed like all the rules were on Drew's end, because he just, like, we would tell him what to do, and then he'd just fuck
send
off
our orders
the
out.
Side of the room and just roll some dice on his own for a bit.
Yes, some very, very, very small
the
dice.
The Drew experience.
Yeah, exactly. So that was interesting. I really enjoyed that. I'd love to play another one of those, especially like knowing a bit more how it works, I think would be a good way to go into it and get maybe a little more out of it.
Yeah. And
in terms of expectations,
I think we were talking about like more players would have probably made it good as well.
Yeah, because there's only two on each side, weren't there?
Was there two on your side or three on your side?
Yeah, two on my side.
Yeah, so it was 2v2. And then Drew was like the game's master. But it was just so much fun once you realised that you could really mess about with it, which I don't think you're supposed to do. I think you're supposed to take it very seriously.
Probably, but I think, you know, in our context where we're not trying to, you know, plan out how to beat the French in 1871, I think it's probably okay that we didn't take it mega seriously.
Yeah, there were some very fun moments of just like, you realise you're trying to do something. You don't know where the enemy are, so you just start demanding things of your troops to do stuff. And
well,
frankly,
and of course, you don't know where your men are necessarily.
Yeah, frankly,
either.
They probably weren't there. They were probably just receiving orders to go do something else. And we'd lost like
getting
a whole
orders that they then can tell you were impossible.
It was a lot of fun to watch as someone not participating. Although now I do wish I kind of had participated, but because where you were playing it was right next to where me and Rich were playing Age of Sigmar. And then so we sort of occasionally look up and see very intense conversations happening and then see Kara bringing over what looks like, you know, those curtains, like modesty curtains you get in hospitals?
Yes.
Bringing over one of those and just walling off a table. And I remember going over to your table, your planning table, and you explaining it to me and saying, oh yeah, and here's our generals, and we've put ourselves next to each other so that we can communicate. And I was like, okay. And then I went over and looked at James and Nick's planning table, and I was like, oh, right, is that you all the way over there, Nick, is it? And then that's you there, James, is it? Okay.
Which is very annoying, in that at one point, like, so to actually be able to talk to your teammate, you have to be in the same rough square as your teammate, as if your generals
have met. Yeah, the same physical proximity in the game.
And then we decided that, okay, from now on, we're going to do everything together. So we were trying to move around the board together, and at one point, Drew said, actually, you've moved off quicker. And I was like, Drew, I don't think I would have done that. I think we would have both been like arm in arm down this road to make sure that we could continue talking together. Because otherwise it's really bloody annoying that I can't talk to him about the strategy.
It is interesting, the idea that you don't necessarily know what your own units are doing, especially when it comes to like the unit that represents you. Because I think on the level that we were operating at, so I think me and Kara had like two divisions each, which is about 20,000-25,000 men, and you know, one sort of piece on the board might be, would it have been a brigade? I think it would have been a brigade, so you know, several thousand men. And I think on that level maybe you can say, well, you know, somewhere down the line, the orders got garbled and, you know, oh no, you're 5 miles the wrong way down the road. But I think in terms of like pure playability or, you know, user experience, it can be a bit frustrating.
I mean, if there'd been more generals on the field, it's like, well, what if two of us are in the same square and so-and-so is not allowed to communicate? I don't think that would have been particularly useful. But it
did leave whenever you want to have a chat.
But it did have it was fun to see like what actually had happened as well. I kind of wish that it had like a thing like in Super Meat Boy where it plays through what you actually did at the end and what you were trying to do.
Wow, like a digitized version. Yeah, that'd be incredible.
Anyway, that was fun. I enjoyed that. Anyway, yeah. Anything else from you, Pete?
Yeah, I've also just played recently, what have I written down? Drop Zone Commander, which is a game that I painted an awful lot of miniatures for at the start of the year and then just sort of let sit. Because, I mean, the thing that is for me is it's the methadone to epics heroin, right?
With GW holding out on you.
Well, exactly, because I've been much anticipating the re-release of Epic, and then it finally got revealed. And, you know, as a tragic freak, I'm very pleased with the fact that it's a 30k Epic. But it's obviously been delayed for an unknown amount of time at the moment. So I've painted a Aeronautica Imperialis Storm Eagle in the meantime to sort of start getting prepared for that, but it's not the same. So yeah, I had Rich Round, I had Crunchy Round to play a game of Drop Zone yesterday, actually. That was a lot of fun. And I've also played a game of 40k against Kaylin, another one of our community members, who she was rocking the Votan. I took my Chaos Space Marines because that is an army that I don't use enough, and I quite like the way it looks as well. I was quite pleased with the way they came out painting them. Black Legion, obviously. And she absolutely smashed me, despite the fact that Votan are like considered quite bad in the meta. So that's always good to see, I think, is somebody bucking the trend of, you know, the meta. Wow. I mean, I'm not a good player, so there's that caveat there, but
win rates require someone to be winning, so it's never...
Well, exactly. Right. If it's not 0%, someone's winning somewhere, aren't they?
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, something that I think gets overlooked if it's not, you know, a high percentage. But what was I going to say? Yes, she played them to their strengths very, very intelligently, and I think that makes all the difference.
Nice.
And that's it for hobby for me. James, what have you been hobbying?
I've been hobbying all over the place, but not actually finishing very much stuff.
Relatable.
Yeah. On the way to our Scotland meetup, I did a big push to get a load of custodies done. And they're sitting on my desk next to me now, and they're still in a state of almost done, where I got them to the point where they're based, they're mostly done, but I haven't highlighted the gold and I haven't done the power weapons, so I can't call them actually done. But they...
Are you not tempted to just dry brush them?
No, I'm going to lightning them. I want to. There's only 15 of them. So okay. Only.
Rod for your own back, my friend.
Yeah, but it'll be fine. Everything will be good. I could have just painted them gold, but I've gone through that before. I've also got some new Space Marines on my desk as well, which are currently painted red. I purchased myself a Storm Speeder and a Gladiator. Ooh. And they were both lovely to put together and good fun, and I just get a lot of fun from how chunky and tonky they are compared to like a lot of the slick and organic-y weird stuff I've been painting prior. It's quite nice to go back to painting a sort of toy tank. So.
Just a big cube.
Just a big cube. Yeah,
they always feel very robust, Space Marine vehicles. Like you could chuck them around the room and just put them back on the table.
Yeah.
Don't do that, obviously.
No,
but...
no, I wouldn't, because they break. But
yeah, and they're quite expensive.
Yeah, I quite like the... I know that... With the Legion Imperialist, like the way they've done the heresy tanks and things, that's kind of almost a specific style now, particularly those new Solar Auxilia ones, which they've got, which are all very nice.
A bit more ornate feeling.
Yeah. But I quite like that the new, like the Primaris tanks are quite, to use the word tactical, like they're quite fun and dumb. They look like something out of Red Alert 2. Are quite
right, a bit action figurey, right?
Yeah, and I think Space Marines kind of should be like that sometimes. So I mean, they can be.
It's definitely one of their available vibes that I think is pretty cool.
I do enjoy that there's multiple vibes available for Space Marines. So,
yeah.
Going on to the other side of the vibes, I've also been building like a boarding patrol for Dark Angels. And that is completely the opposite side of the vibes, where it's like kit bashed every miniature with something.
Right.
And I haven't even started painting them yet, but.
Classic James.
Yeah, it's that one's going to be. Like, just like a cheeky 1,000-point boarding patrol with led by the lion and, like, no vehicles. No,
wow.
Just
surely that's,
troops.
Like, a good 400 points then.
Exactly. That's why it's not very many Space Marines. It's quite easy to make this many. And also it uses up all of the Heresy models, which I'm not going to get around to painting in any other way. So
can't believe it.
I know. I've got my Heresy armies. I've got Custodes. I've got Mechanicum. I don't need the as-planned... Alpha Legion, which I wanted to go in on, and then realized that I don't like playing Heresy that much, so didn't want to go in on because I've already.
Maybe you'd like to if you played Alpha Legion.
Maybe, but I'm not gonna, because that requires painting an army, and I'm not gonna do that.
Well,
and then all the people would be there, like, oh, which special rule do they have? I'd be like, I don't know.
You know what special rule they have? They're 2 inches further away than they actually are. It's really good, actually.
That's really good, but that also sounds like the kind of thing I would definitely forget at all times and have to
definitely
get like.
Wouldn't if you were playing me.
I'd get special rulers made up with like the correct digits made.
Starts on a 2.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be a great idea, actually, if you turned up at an event with like custom rulers to give to your opponent. With like Alpha Legion shit on them.
With the little snaky things on.
Yeah, yeah.
To be fair, that
somebody do this. Oh. Somebody do this.
If only they had that rule in a good game.
Reader, I'm looking at him with disdain.
And I'm just trolling. It's fine.
It's fine. You hate it.
What else have we been doing? So, I've been playing some 10th, which has been good. In the aforementioned Scotland. I'll hold that to the end so then we can jump back to what JD did. But I played with my AdMech in 10th for the first time on the other day with Jamie from our server. And they brought Necrons, and I was very intimidated. And then I was also intimidated because I've never played with AdMech before in 10th. And I've heard that they suck. And it turns out that they suck. They suck real bad. It doesn't seem to be for lack of... it's really hard to put my finger on why they're just not in a great place. It just feels like everyone's better than them. And that their rules aren't... Like, I don't want to like dogpile onto them and like say that, oh yeah, they're absolutely terrible, blah, blah, blah. Like, I wanted to give them a fair shake.
But...
It felt like I just could not do anything against anything. Like, the most I could do was reduce AP on things, but things were hitting me at AP minus 2, and I've already got a 5+ save, so everything was on 6+ saves all the time. The buffs that tech priests give out and the like characters that give out just don't seem to have that much impact on the... Mm-hmm. Troops that they go with, it doesn't feel like you can get a combo going like you can with Custodes or with Space Marines or with other armies, which I've seen where it feels like the characters have like a real like positive effect on your unit. Mm-hmm. And I just could not get any momentum out of them. And I will play them again. I will play with them again because they are still quite fun to do things and shout the names of the weapons that they have. Like solar atomizer.
Like signature army as well.
Well, yeah.
I think.
And Transuranic Aquabus.
Hell yeah.
All of those things are fun still. And they are a bit
simpler.
All those
are fun things to say.
Yeah, they're fun things to say. The rad bombardment like thing for their detachment is shit. It is just the worst thing to just...
Is that their special rule?
Yeah, it's like you can...
Detachment rule.
You can start the game... Yeah, it's the detachment rule for their thing. You start the game...
The index detachment, yeah.
...with the opponent chooses what happens, and it's like on a 3+, you get D3 mortal wounds on your unit, which sounds good. Like, that sounds pretty legit. But you can also choose to just start broken, or whatever the word is.
Battle shocks.
And that doesn't really affect much at the start of the game, really.
No.
So it's like, well, I'll just be battle shocked.
Considering you don't need to be capturing objectives in turn one,
yeah,
barring some secondaries.
And then the other thing is if you're playing Necrons, Jamie was just like, well, I'll just take all your mortal wounds and regenerate them then. I was like, okay, well, there you go. So any damage
that happened before the game starts.
Yeah, it's like before round one. So.
Yes, because then their command phase would have been repairing all that shit, I guess.
Yes, yeah. And I guess we played that wrong because they didn't do that, but then it didn't matter anyway because they regenerated all their wounds.
Just didn't need it.
The only thing I killed in this game was the reanimator.
What?
At one point, some immortal...
Was it 1,000 points or more?
1,500 we played.
And you killed one thing?
I killed one thing. I killed more, but they came back. So.
Sure.
I mean, I killed the same wraiths about 5 times, so...
Sounds to me like you weren't focusing enough, my friend.
I was focusing as much as I bloody well could. Yeah, AdMech, not in a good place. Still fun to try and play. I would do it again, but it didn't feel particularly good. On to what we did in Scotland all those weeks ago now. So I got a few games of 40k in, and I was playing with, unlike the sucky AdMech, I was playing with the quite good Custodes, and that's a much more fun experience, where instead of looking for sixes, you're looking for twos nearly all the time. Nothing feels better than that. And I played against Wilkes, and we had a Custodes mirror match, which was very
outrageous.
Fun. Yeah. And things like, it just makes you appreciate a lot of the rules in the new 40k, like bringing stuff that, bringing stuff in the after the movement phase.
Deep strike.
It's deep strike, but is it rapid ingress?
Oh, yes, yeah. Rapid ingress.
Stuff like that has just so much more fun and flavor to it than the previous edition, I guess, because you're bringing units down and then you can do stuff with them the next turn, and you can really play around. Like Custodes, the Terminators can do this from Golden Light thing where you move them about, and then at the end of the enemy's movement phase, the enemy's turn, you just take them off and redeploy them and things. So it just feels like an army which is moving all over the place and having a lot of dynamic interactions, which is good because you've only got about 7 of them. So, and then playing that against another player who's playing with Custodes is like you're trying to play mind games about where everyone's going to move all the time.
Right.
So that was a good laugh.
That's cool. You're basically doing, what is it called? The blood games.
Yeah, they're like, that's what we were doing.
Training exercise. You're basically doing that.
Yeah. So we had a couple of games with Wilkes. We did a combat patrol just to warm up, and then we did a bigger game, which we didn't finish. And then the next day I played Drew's Orcs, was, again, another game of, like, at one point I had no models on the table because everything was either deep striking, being destroyed by orcs, or had teleported around. So nice. We, like, switched places on the board and, like, were charging each other from all other places. It was good fun. Good laugh. I think I lost that one. Yes, I definitely lost that one. But I did, and to openly mock Drew... his war boss kept running away from combat.
Wow.
And
not a role player then.
He was saying it was sneaky orcs, which is fine, I know. But you know,
what colour were they painted?
I mean, they were painted blue, so maybe that's the start.
That's not sneaky.
No. But what happened
purple
was
sneaky.
I pulled off like a 11-inch charge with Trage Valoris to punish such manoeuvres. And, then that Orc War boss was no more because Trage is a beast. So, yeah, that's what I've been playing.
Trages.
Big old Trages. Yeah. Oh, and I've also been playing some painting some Warhound Titans, which I forgot about there in front of me. because I too am excited by this game that's probably not going to come out for a little bit. So,
heck yes.
I don't care how the wonky the rules are. I do want to just put loads of tiny tanks on a battlefield. Yeah. So,
are you painting that with the idea of attaching them to a specific army in mind, or is it just having stuff ready to go?
A little bit of A, a little bit of B. I know that there's Warhounds in the box. I just kind of wanted to, one, I wanted to paint some Titans, because I've never actually gotten around to it. And watching yours and Kara's game, I was just like, I really want to paint some Titans. And they're all sold out everywhere because they're obviously being reboxed for the new game, and then they're not coming out for ages, so now there's no Titans around. But I'm thinking that I'll probably at least paint up the box of Legions and see how it goes. Ideally, I'd kind of want to have more Titans than the rules seem to allow, but that's
You can always play that against me and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Rad. Right. Oh yeah, JD, what games did you get up to in Scotland? You did play Rich at AOS in what was a very fun game to watch.
Yeah, it was extremely close. Like, it was possibly the single closest game of Sigmar I've ever had. Every turn, it seemed like something was... It was swinging backwards and forwards, basically. Especially because I think I got off to quite a bad start. But then it came...
What armies were involved?
So I was playing with my Stormcast, and Rich was playing with Cruel Boys, so it was a box art showdown.
Hell yeah.
which was a lot of fun to do. It literally came down to the final charge roll of the game. Because if I'd got a high enough charge roll, I'd have been able to position my last unit in such a way that I could have taken an objective and scored the points to win the game. But it didn't work out. I rolled a one. Sorry, no, I rolled a four for the charge.
Spent
the command point to rerolled it into a four.
Of course.
Excellent.
Shouldn't
have done that either.
Yeah, it was great fun. I played two other games of AOS that weekend with Nick against his KO. That was good. I won that. Again, despite getting off to a bad start and having a unit shot basically off the board immediately. And then, had a game against Shane's Seraphon, which, again, I won, but by quite a narrow margin. It was good. AOS is good fun, and I really enjoyed the games that I had, but I am getting to a point, particularly with my Stormcast, where I'm ready for the next edition now. Especially because I don't particularly keep up with the the General's Handbooks or whatever. I don't keep up with the competitive rule sets. I'm just ready for the next edition, really.
It's the word on the street that'll probably be next year.
I'd have thought so, yeah. If we're sticking to GW's, what seems to be now their 3-year cycle.
The modern 3-year cycle.
Then, we're due AOS next summer. I'll be excited to get some more Stormcast models, because that's almost certainly what it'll be. And I'll be excited to play with a fully painted Stormcast army for the 2 months that they're good until the rules team stops being conservative with rules and starts dishing out cool abilities to everybody else.
I think that dragon build lasted 2 months, but I may be wrong.
My pal Ryan went to a tournament this weekend gone, or the weekend just before, where his first game was against the dragon, the dragons, 11 man. Dragons, and he got absolutely bodied by it. Because he had no response to it. but also, I don't know if you can count it as being good if it requires you to buy five 70 quid boxes and make it
70 quid?
About that. I think it's 65, something like that.
Jings. Did not realise that.
To spam one unit. You know what I mean? But yeah, I enjoy playing on my Stormcast. I'm just sort of ready for them to get some new toys and have a bit of a change. See what they've learned from the new from the General's Handbooks and stuff this last edition.
I'm interested what they bring from like 40K as well.
I'm really like, curious as well because 10th 40K seems to have taken a lot of lessons from both Sigma and Kill Team in weird ways, in different ways.
Yes.
Which I'm a big fan of because Sigma and Kill Team are like my two favourite GW games. So yeah, I'm curious to see what sort of how to what extent 10th will then feed into Sigma and so on. And then I played a game of Kill Team as well. I gave Rachel, fellow pod person Rachel, her first game of Kill Team. I think that seemed to go well. She seemed to enjoy herself. Which is good. Eldar got bodied by Eldar Guardians.
Excellent.
It was good fun though. But yeah,
nice.
Love Kill Team, want to play more of it, and I'm quite sad that our community is now getting into Kill Team after me evangelizing it for 2 years with
in the best possible
Space
way.
Marines fighting Space Marines.
I mean, I'm yeah.
Talk about the monkey's paw closing.
I don't know what you mean. He says painting the exact thing.
I haven't even thought of what I'm going to do for that yet. But
are you doing it, though?
I think I'll do it, yeah. I'm, heck yes. I'm in on the idea of playing lots of Kill Team, because obviously Kill Team is good. And JD, I would play more Kill Team if I had more rules, so... I probably would have invested in it. I've got enough boards and terrain to play it, so
I genuinely have no idea what the rules are still, despite having created two Kill Teams for this event
and despite me offering for 2 years, Pete, to play,
yeah,
to play
the,
Kill Team with
you know
you.
All right, come up to Birmingham, you can show me in the comfort of my own home.
All right, let's carry on our traditional podcast routine and go into the place where we talk about things that are not hobby but we have proposed to talk about as if they were features of some kind. And the number one on my list is Pete, I believe you wanted to have a rant about something.
A rant?
Yeah.
Well, that's an editorial angle that I didn't sign off on. So my topic is the concept of being comfortable with not being creative in your hobby. I think a lot of people sort of get a lot of joy in this hobby by like being creative in various different ways, whether it comes from like kit bashing or, you know, converting stuff or painting things. And I just want to raise my little flag up and say, you don't have to do that. If you like it, that's great. But if you don't, there's a real joy in, I don't know how exactly you'd say it, being quote unquote historically accurate to the setting that you're in. So I as previously mentioned, I'm painting some Lamenters for this Bad Up War Kill Team thing. And I just love finding source material and, you know, very exactingly recreating it to the best of my abilities. So whether it's, you know, a color scheme or an iconography style that a certain chapter uses, or like if I'm painting my heresy stuff, it's the same thing, you know. I suppose there is a little bit of wiggle room in it in that these settings that GW comes out with and various other, you know, companies, they're never 100% set in stone or 100% explained. And I think that's a good thing because it lets the players in it have some sort of wiggle room. So you can sort of think, well, I don't know what this transfer means, so I'm going to put it on and in my head it means X, Y, or Z. But I find that my engagement in the hobby is largely, you know, I don't think I approach it with a creative mindset, and I think that gives me quite a, I don't know, I get a lot of joy from that. And I wondered what you guys thought of that sort of concept.
Interesting.
Any thoughts, JD?
I mean, I've discussed before in this podcast my tendencies for being an absolute law hog, and but doing my own stuff within it, right, and sort of mapping out, you know, like for Age of Sigmar, mapping out a civilization that fell, and then became, you know, some of the people from it became my Stormcast, you know, Stormhost, and I'm taking that even further with my future Cities of Sigmar army, which I pre-ordered the first bit of yesterday. Wow! Because dating this podcast, this recording,
that means we have to be quick to get it out.
like to the point where,
remember all those years ago,
they're going to be, you know, the color scheme that I came up with my Stormcast is going to apply as well to my Cities of Sigmar stuff, because the idea is that they are the mortal auxiliaries from the city that the Stormcast have then gone and founded. So I do like to sort of be creative. I don't know. Creative feels like a...
Well, no, I think that's totally up with stuff, right?
Yeah, I just feel like saying it's creative is bigging myself up a little bit.
The thing is, I think creative is not intrinsically like... It is a good thing, but I think it's not necessarily like a value judgment. Like, it's describing how you're engaging with something. Like, you know, you're being creative in the sense that you're creating new things. I mean, I was going to say, they might be total horseshit in whether you're being creative or not. I'm sure they're not, because you're somebody that's good at that sort of thing. But you take my point in general.
No, yeah, for sure. Like, I think... Yeah, I do find it quite important to... It's not often that I'm tempted to do, like, a canon colour scheme. Mm. The exception was, of course, when I was going to do Heresy.
Sure.
Like, I was absolutely going to, you know, go down to the sort of... Yeah, when I was doing my Raven Guard, it was going to be, yeah, this is an accurate representation of the Raven Guard in the 31st millennium.
Well, Heresy is an interesting one for that, because I think it's probably the one game where that is the default expectation.
No, sure,
to
yeah.
How people engage with but it. Like, you don't get many people that are like, here's my custom legion that I've made.
Well, that's perhaps, you know, why I was doing it for Heresy, because it feels like that's the right way, not, well, quote unquote, right way to do it.
I think it's certainly the default way that people engage with it.
It's similar to, like, I haven't got much of an interest in the reboot of Old World for various reasons, because I suspect that the rules will probably the rules will probably be bad. Because I remember playing Fantasy Battle as a kid and it was shite.
And it was great.
Yeah,
it was great.
But I don't mix that in stereo, so you're gonna get like great and thing. It's gonna be the little things in people's heads.
I'm not, you know, there's maybe a little bit of me that does, you know, think, oh, it'd be quite cool to do, like, I don't know, some regiments of Empire state troops from Ostermark or whatever.
Yes, it would.
But at the same time, I'm not that interested in doing that enough to get me into that system, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's not often that I'm tempted to do a canon colour scheme, really, unless it's like a small project. So...
What about your Blood Raven?
Yeah, I mean, that's cause my Space Marines were never intended to be like a massive thing. It was supposed to be originally just a small army, and I've got more stuff for it now, but it's never going to go beyond 2,000 points or whatever. You know, for my Cadian stuff that I've picked up, that's going to be a small part of the wider Guard army that I'm doing, which is going to be mostly Death Corps. So I'm fine with painting Cadians in, you know, default Cadian 8th colour scheme or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when I'm approaching a project, it's not often that I'll think, oh, do you know what I really fancy doing? I don't know, some Dark Angels, and paint them and recreate the Dark Angels colour scheme or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's, yeah, I generally prefer to sort of sit and have a think about it and come up with something that I feel is largely my own.
It's a little bit like taking the mental load out of doing something. I kind of find, like, while I've gone on record saying I like kit bashing a lot of stuff, and doing things just kind of like as I want to, really. It's probably actually the reason why I bounced off painting Alpha Legion was that I wanted to paint them in like the modern heavy metal style, which doesn't actually fit with a lot of...
Hard disagree.
I mean, it was starting to look really nice and things, but anyway, I like painting like Blood Angels as Blood Angels. It's nice to just like say, all right, I'm going to get that kit out of the box, I'm going to build it, and I'm going to paint it red, and it's going to look pretty cool. And like, there's no like shame, or there's no there's nothing really to that other than the enjoyment of building the kit, painting the thing,
right?
And that's why I do those kind of things personally.
Yeah.
When it comes to things where it's a little bit more loose, I find it's the stuff outside of like where there are quite regimented chapters and regimented things within the lore as well. So like the Custodes I've got, they're painted Solar Watch, which is a canon color scheme for them. It's yes. in there. Thing. And like the only kit bashing I did there was I just swapped their heads around a little bit, and I don't think any of them are beyond that, including ones where, or giving them helmets, because I don't really like the bareheaded Custodes that much. So I was just like, everyone gets a helmet, and then just swap around the helmets a little bit, and then a few of them are bareheaded because I ran out of helmets. But things when it comes to like a Titan Legion or like a Knight Household or like the Admech and things like that, I felt that the background and the lore supported doing something which was a little bit more free from like what the standards are. And then there's game benefits to doing it that way as well. So it's quite nice to go in and like say, okay, these Admech are like this color. It's not a canon color scheme, so I can take... Well, it doesn't really matter anymore in 10th.
It doesn't matter now, but it used to.
It used to.
This is something that I have controversial opinions on, which is that I hated that. Like I in 8th edition, I painted my Admech army as Griffin 4, right? Which is a canon scheme, but it didn't have any rules. So in theory, I could have just run it whatever I wanted to. But one, through laziness, and two, through sort of bloody mindedness, I ran them with the same rules for like two editions, like every time I played them, because to me, and again this is my own sort of neuroses about things, that's how they fight, right? That is them. They have a set identity, and to be fair, it was like the most generic rules. It was like the Mars rules, so it's not like they were that characterful or anything. But when it comes to stuff like that, I find, I tell you, part of it is because I remember one of my very, very early games of 8th, so probably like one of the first 10 games I had coming back into 40k after, you know, the teenage absence, was a game against somebody with an Eldar army, when the Eldar meta was to have like a detachment of normal stuff in whatever craft world you wanted, and then also a detachment of a Latok Hemlock Wraith Fighters, three of them, because you get like -2 or -3 to hit them, and they were just impossible to deal with. And the fact to me that they'd like mix, and you know, they weren't painted at all, so I can't even give them kudos for that. So I don't know, part... This is just me being like a slightly judgy arsehole, I think, but I really don't like that approach to things, for myself at least.
I get what you mean, because it still kind of works that way in AOS, where you've got you've got your defined sub factions for a lot of armies anyway, like Stormcast, you've got your choice of storm hosts. They have got build your own sub faction rules, but only in the Path to Glory narrative.
Yes, you can't just use them.
Yeah, you can't just design a storm host and use it in normal play.
You can go to
play.
A tournament and use them.
So I'm kind of with you on that, Pete, because I could theoretically pick any storm host I wanted, any time. But I early on picked Knights Excelsior. Because it reflected the way that I wanted that army to fight, which was using a lot of like paladins, you know, the big chonky Stormcast. And I've stuck with that the whole way through. There's never been a moment where I've gone, oh, well, what I should do is get a bunch of, get some more fulminators and run them as Hammers of Sigmar or whatever.
Right.
I've stuck with, you know, Knights Excelsior. Because that's because canonically in my head, that's how they fight. That's what they are. Although,
sure.
Even though I know they're not Knights Excelsior.
Yeah, I guess that's your, that's kind of like your narrative as well. Like, my, I never ran Blood Angels as anything else. I've never run my Custodes as anything else. And I've actually never run, I only started running my Admech as Mars when I realized that if I didn't do that, I would lose all of my games. And also, it stopped me taking Belisarius Call, and I've got quite a nicely painted Belisarius Call.
Yes, so that is like, the other thing.
Okay, I'm going to do that for now, and I'm also just going to do that while I play in a tournament. But
yeah,
like most of the time, I was still playing the same like faction because it just fit the rules that I wanted to, and I always wanted to do it in that way. Right.
I have no actual like moral judgment on this. This is simply a question of taste that I've sort of, you know, put far too much importance on, I think.
Yeah, I think it is fine though. Like, I don't think it's actually any less creative to sit and paint something to the box art or to a standard which is already predefined. Like, you are not, this isn't the argument about generative AI art. This is an argument about, but it's not an argument. It's just about, I wanted to do it this way, so I did.
Mm,
like,
right.
That's kind of it. And I don't think that's actually any less creative than
I'd agree with that, James, to be honest. I think it's an inherently creative hobby. Like, you know, even if, to get meta about it, even if you are painting, you know, pure, like following step by step, here's the guide on how to paint Blood Angels and following it exactly, you are still creating something. You are still and it's gonna have your own touches and your own style anyway. Like, there's different ways of, like, so for example, Pete, you've I appreciate it's the different systems, but you've got Heresy Blood Angels.
Yes.
And friend of the pod for Tang has some 40k Blood Angels. The way you've painted them is totally different. They both look great.
Yeah, that's true.
They look different, and not just because they're different models, because they've been painted in a different way and with a different sensibility.
By a different person.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You've got your own nuance. You've got your own like unique style. Even if that style is like, I use base wash, dry brush, base wash, highlight.
That's me.
Things like that. That's as much as a style as like, I do pottery and I fire it in this certain way. And it's all just a number of choices which you made along the way. How you build your models is a creative act. How you base your models is a creative act. And that's probably a lot of the time is where a lot of people's like stuff really comes out. Like, did you put black rims on there? I've heard that that's a bit controversial sometimes. Anyway,
depending on who you ask.
Yeah, it depends on who you ask. And
black rims all the way.
It's all choices that you're making, even if it is to create something that is similar to something someone else has done.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that I brought it up, because I think I've never really considered that perspective on it, and you know, I'm okay with it. Like, I'm pretty much fine as describing myself as like not a creative person, but I guess I'd never considered that aspect of creativity. So that's food for thought.
I think my only argument would be, I think you are being creative.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
And it's recreational, and it is fun. And I was taken back.
I guess.
I was taken back to a discussion I had with my dad when I was about 8 years old, when I tried to explain that I thought playing with Lego wasn't just me playing with toys, that I was learning stuff and building things at the same time. And I don't think he believed me. And that scarred me ever since. So,
well, he bought it, so
yeah, he,
you know,
bought me.
Jokes on him.
And he said, well, it's just creative play, isn't it? And I was like, yeah, okay. So I think it's
damn.
That. Yeah, anyway. Not scarred. I'm fine. This isn't therapy. I'll talk about that later this week.
Line.
And I'll pay someone for it.
Anyway. Now we get to the Lego trauma section. Everyone's got it.
Good. okay, let's pivot the boat and let's go into another direction. And this is a chat about something that isn't even a tabletop game in the sense of little Warhammer figures at the very least. Myself
Gasp.
And JD have been playing quite a lot of this little game called Blades in the Dark, which is actually, I'm going to put JD on the spot. JD, can you explain what Blades in the Dark is for our lovely listeners?
Tabletop RPG, isn't it?
Yeah.
And me, frankly, because I don't really know what it is.
It's a tabletop RPG, like pen and paper RPG, which we've not used any pen and paper. We've been playing it on Roll20, on a virtual tabletop, but still. The idea being that you are a bunch of people in a cursed, horrible city in a world where the sun has exploded and demons and ghosts exist.
Hate it when that happens.
And, hell yeah. But this is not, it is not a story about you saving the world. It is a story about you trying to survive and make it rich by doing crime until you either die or are able to retire a traumatized wreck. It's a lot of fun.
Hate when that happens.
It's a lot of fun. It's quite you can definitely feel some of the, some Warhammer influence if we're going to try it in a vain attempt to
to, I mean, link. I don't really care. I think it's fun to talk about all sorts of games on here. So, but it is kind of Mordheim-y, I guess.
In some ways, some certainly.
The setting,
yeah.
It's quite the way ghosts and things work. I get kind of Age of Sigmar-y vibes from some of it, but it's a little bit more steampunk and a little bit more. It takes a lot of influence from the games Dishonored on the PC, and other consoles are available.
A lot of whale oil.
Yeah, with whale oil spelt with W A E L. it's just a really fun system for doing some quite breezy but intense role playing, and me being quite the TTRPG pen and paper baby. We did a long time ago a podcast about Soulbound, because we're having a lot of fun playing Soulbound. Obviously got the Warhammer link in there. But this feels like it's like a step up from that. Yeah, so it's quite creative as a player and a GM, I think, but I'll put any GM questions over to JD, because JD was our GM for our first season of this. But as a player, it was like, compared to Soulbound, it felt very much more that you were in control of the story as much as the GM was, which was a different feeling from other D&D which I've played, from the Soulbound that I've played, and from some other like RPGs that I've played. So I think as a collaborative experience, that's where I was getting a lot from it. It was actually quite hard to know when you could jump in for something that could change the story or could change something. But then it's also got this mechanic of flashbacks. So the general...
That's what really happened.
Yeah. The general gist is that you've got a heist or mission that you're doing, and you start almost... what's the fancy term for it? Is it in media res?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. So you start, and you've started the heist, and you're posed with a challenge from our lovely Game Master JD or something. And at some point, you can think to yourself, I just don't know how to get out of this situation or what I'm even expected to do. So what I will do is flash back and give myself the solution to it, but then there's a cost to it. And it's sometimes worth like sending a message, obviously, to your lovely DM before you do something ridiculous. But it's got that kind of conversation which is always going on, which I sometimes find in RPGs for their positives and negatives, that sometimes you're just playing the GM's game. And this definitely felt like a more creative and more engaging way to tell a group story. So yeah, I could pass to JD. What do you find? How do you find GMing it?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. People like me. It's great for largely the reasons that you've outlined, because, and I mean, selfishly, you know, there's more reasons why it's good to run and everything, but one really good thing about it is that I don't need to do that much prep for it, because all I really need to do is give you a situation and give you the stakes and let you guys just sort of figure it out. And I'm just sort of there to occasionally throw an obstacle at you or tell you how something resolves. So it could be, you know, one thing I'd quite like about it, though, is it establishes in the book that when you do flashbacks, you can't time travel. Like, it's not, you know, if we establish that, I don't know, say if a guard is walking down the corridor towards you, you can't flash back and say, oh, well, actually, I seduced him last night and gave him a heavy dose of sleeping poison or whatever that means he's not actually there. See, you can have it just about to kick in, but you can't have it. He's still in bed and isn't actually there, because he is there.
You've established
that he's there in the fiction.
You're not changing what you've literally already seen in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like, if you come up to, like, a locked door and you've tried the handle and it's locked, you can't then flash back and go, I actually came here and unlocked the door last night, because it's locked.
It's actually not locked, and it was never locked.
It's basically that scene in Bill and Ted where they sit there and they say, how do we get out of here? Oh, well, just remember in the future to travel back in time to get the key and put it under that thing. Okay, where is it? Look under there. There it is. I've got the key.
But yeah, like, you know, it's very, yeah, I like that, how collaborative it is on some level, because, like, as you said, James, sometimes I think in other TTRPGs, especially ones that are more sort of mechanics heavy, it is very much, here is the encounter that the GM has designed for you, and this is basically a box with a solution in it. And Blades isn't that. Blades is very much, it's collaborative storytelling. It is, like you say, there's a conversation that happens where, say, somebody wants to do something cool, and they say, well, I think I should make this kind of role for it. And then I say, well, sure, you could, but would it not be more appropriate that it be this type of role instead because of this action you're doing? And then there's a back and forth of, like, you essentially justifying your position. And then there's a consensus that gets agreed upon and it works out. And that's one of the things I really like about it. Yeah, you could just keep rolling ones and twos all the way through. Because it's, so the way its rolls are structured is that, so it's all using D6s. And all that really happens, the only buffs you or benefits you really get, you never get to, like, modify the roll, but you get to add more dice to the pool, basically. And basically give yourself more chances. So the way it works is that a one or a two is just a complete critical failure. Well, not critical failure, but it's just a complete failure. You fail to do the thing you were trying to do, and you get no benefit. And you're probably now in a much worse position than you were before. I think a three, four, or five is, you succeed, you do the thing you're trying to do, but there's a complication. Like, something happens. Like, I don't know, you knock out the guard, but he stumbles into a rack of, like, swords and knocks it over as he goes down, and everybody's heard it. So someone will be coming to investigate. And then a one six in the roll is just a straight success. No, you know, you just succeed at the thing you're trying to do, and there's no complication. And then two sixes or more is a critical success. So it's very hard to get a critical success. It's very hard to just get a straight up success with no complication. Because the fantasy
these
is
that, like, you cancel each other out as well.
No, it's just, so you roll the pool of dice. So say you get to roll three dice for this thing.
Yeah.
You pick the one highest.
Okay, I see.
And then obviously that's, if there's two sixes, then those both count. But right. That's the only context in which they would sort of, two dice would create a result.
But the
fantasy is very much that you are desperate, you are always on edge, you are always under pressure, you are always under threat. You can't ever relax. You can't ever be guaranteed of anything. And I think it creates a great like pressure cooker environment where things start to go wrong and you really have to think the players really have to think how they're going to get out of it. Because, I mean, I will admit to in our first season, perhaps being a bit shy with harm, basically. Harm and consequences. So I sort of pulled punches, and I think going forward, I definitely won't be, because I think it just creates more pressure the more there is at stake. Like, you know, someone could die.
Yeah, but it also, the more like trauma that your character gets, which is a mechanic in the game, but that gives you more levers to pull as a character. Like, you can have essentially PTSD for certain situations. Like, your character could have survived an explosion, but now hates loud noises. So then, when a loud noise occurs, you could role play out like, "Oh God, there's a loud noise," or the DM could play on that. That there's loud noises in this place, your head is ringing and you don't know what to do and you're freaking out about this situation that you're in because you've just rolled badly and now there's lots of sound and that's exactly the situation you didn't want to have. It's a really nice system for just creating. And also, your characters aren't particularly great at what they're supposed to be able to do. Like, they are kind of like, they're just normal chumps. People. Yeah, they're just chumps with a little bit of skill. Like, some of them could be slightly better at shooting. Some of them can just occasionally pull a ghost out of thin air and kill everyone by accident, but then is scared by the ghost they've done.
The justification in the core book, it explains that the only thing that really sets scoundrels, which is its term for player characters, apart from the general population is their ability to stress that, like, push themselves through stress, to be able to just endure and keep pushing, to see it through, basically. But then that does have consequences. So yeah, one of your like resources that you have as a player is called stress, and you get to spend it in various ways, and you are encouraged to spend it in various ways, because if you never spend it, you won't get anywhere, because you'll come up against the situations where you aren't going to have necessarily the number of dice that you need to get out alive if you don't push yourself or you don't use stress or do flashbacks or whatever, because using a flashback costs you stress, and it costs a variable amount of stress depending on how unlikely or how difficult the flashback was to pull off. Or you can, as a normal thing, you can just do any time, you can push yourself and you take two stress and you get to add a dice, basically. And it represents the idea that you are putting all of your effort into this one thing. There's so many, as James said, levers to pull for both the GM and the players to sort of create this quite intense story. I think it does require, I think it's designed and requires a certain mindset. I think the mindset it needs is basically, everyone has to go in with the same buy-in of like, we are here to tell a story about about these people, not we are here to win the game. Because you can't, for example, the way combat works, there's no combat system. There's no combat system at all. You just sort of build, you ask for roles and build clocks and things as required. Yeah. But there's no like mechanical, you do this much damage against their HP or whatever. There's nothing like that. You can't really optimize your character in any way because you're just limited in what you can do, really. You only get so many, you know, levels, ranks or whatever in skills, you know, and after a certain point, there's no more you can add. Like the characters in our campaign are sort of at a point where in some regards, they're quite highly skilled for what they do, but they can't get any better. Like for Tang's character is now quite good at shooting, but he's not going to get any better at it. But he might come up in situations where he needs to be better at it.
In one way, I think it's actually closer to games like Fiasco than it is D&D, particularly in the way that players have to almost surprise each other with their solutions to problems or collaborate on a solution together. So it's no secret that during our game, like, myself and Rich would exchange messages about things to do with our characters and ask questions of each other. And that's something that some games of and TTRPGs can almost miss, in that people get so involved in their characters as little precious things that they have created to take on this dungeon crawl, that it can almost be like, well, the characters don't have to interact that much to solve a problem beyond I am the tank.
Stat sheet.
Yeah, it's like, why you're the tank, why aren't you tanking? And you're the mage, why aren't you buffing the tank? And things like that. Like, those solutions are almost like played out for you in certain situations, whereas in Blades and obviously in like things like what really freeform things like Fiasco, it is very much more like, well, I think my character might want to do this. Oh, you've got that. What is it that you can do with that? And like, oh, could both of our characters have been in this situation before? And that's why we're going to solve it in this way right now. So it was almost a pleasure to see like people put together solutions, and they might just ask you a question about something that you have done once, like, how did that thing work when you did that? It's like, oh, well, my character does this and I think it works like this, and then later on it just comes back up Rich had poisoned a whole crew of a boat using some horrible slugs and stuff that my character had previously used in another situation. And it was like this nice coming together of everything that we had been working towards, and like a nice solution that had come from the story that we had told. So, yeah. Anyway.
I think one thing I'd just like to point out, I think on the it requiring not so much prep from the GM side of it, a good example of this is in our campaign very early on. So the initial setup, the initial sort of story hook that you were given, is that you've come into this district, you've set up your base here, but there is a brewing gang between these two major gangs, because the gang that normally keeps the peace is having a leadership struggle, so they're not able to intervene. So it's about to break out in the streets, and then you come in as this crew of smugglers who are ready to sort of, you know, take advantage of the situation or bend one way or the other or whatever. And then I think in the second session that you did a smuggling job where you ran some stolen military, you know, rifles and things to an underground resistance movement. And you became so obsessed with this resistance movement that the whole gang war was forgotten about very quickly. And it became, actually, no, we're now aiding this, you know, fight for freedom in a nation. Oh, yeah. A nation that is essentially you've played The Witcher, haven't you, Pete?
I have.
You know what's it called, the islands?
Skellige.
You know how it's basically a mashup of like Scotland, Ireland and Scandinavia?
Yes.
That's in this particular island in this world is described like that. So I played it, obviously, having Wilkes, who is Scottish, in our group. I played it to the hilt with, you know, how Scottish it is. So straight away, as soon as it became this thing of you are essentially fighting for Scottish independence, it became this whole other, it went off in a completely different direction that I'd never intended. But because it required so little of me, you know, prep-wise and designing encounters-wise, it wasn't that I had to throw my entire campaign out the window. It just sort of changed. I was just, okay, sweet, let's do this then.
Sweet.
Like, this is just a slightly different direction the story's taken. Let's see where we go, because it's the joy of sort of discovering it as you go. I hadn't mapped out the whole thing. I had a few things that I had notes on, knowing that here's what this faction is trying to do, here's what this faction is trying to do, here's how those goals conflict with each other and why they might come into disagreement or whatever. But that's basically it. I hadn't written out like a whole arc or anything like that. It just sort of happened. And then it was only as we got towards the end of the quote-unquote season that I started to think more heavily about, like, how am I going to wrap this up, basically.
Right, based on what's already happened.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. But it's fantastic. I recommend that people play it and give it a go and whatever. I think if you are somebody who's like an RPG power gamer, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's not how I personally like to play RPGs, but fine. If, you know, people enjoy what they enjoy. But if you're someone who likes trying to find ways to break the system and, like, you know, do weird character shit where you manage to break the game, it's not for you, because it just doesn't work like that. You just can't do it, because it's the system's just not built for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very roleplay heavy is one thing I'll say, but to me that's perfect.
The theater kids' favorite RPG.
Honestly, got it. That's
Blades in the Dark, I think it whips. Right? We're on to the letters section of the podcast, in which we take questions from various people who have sent us questions. We have three questions, two of which are from the same person, and one is from Anonymous. So
maybe it's three.
The whole of Anonymous, all of them.
Whole of Anonymous. Well, actually, the way I've written it, it's...
I noticed it earlier, and I really tried not to bring it up because I thought it was really funny.
Right, let's start with a question from John. John asks, the top hobby tip from each of you that you wish you had known when you started or restarted in the hobby?
I mean, I'm going to just completely cop out and... give something that literally everyone knows by now, but washes are really good, shades are really good, you should use them, because I went through my entire like teenage Warhammer experience not using them, not being aware of them, and it took, because I got back into the hobby 2014, and it took me about a year back in the hobby to again realize that was a thing that could just like instantly and effortlessly make your painting look better. And of course in these days of contrast and stuff, I think you could probably copy paste that advice onto something a bit more transformative than shades are, but I think that is the sort of vibe that I would go with, like just use the basic tools that are available, and it turns out they're quite good.
Yeah, I agree. I think actually in this day and age of contrast, that when I got back into the hobby again, just like you, Pete, I'd never heard of a wash when I started. I think I don't like how contrast looks all the time.
Oh yeah.
Whereas
I'm
like
the same
particularly
way.
Like on Stormcast and Space Marines, I think it can look quite just it looks like it is. It looks like it does. I don't.
Well, it depends how you're using it. But if you're using it to like paint the whole model, I think it really suits a more organic,
absolutely,
sort of
like
tapestry
to
be
like
wanky about it.
Orcs and things with fabrics and things. It really shines in those situations. But every time I see like those very early, like it's base coated Wraithbone, the contrast is put over the top of the Space Marine, and I think that looks like a Space Marine covered in contrast paint. Whereas I think the base wash and then just that part, I think that gives a better first effect than base and contrast. Maybe I haven't tried the newer ones, like the more like pigmented ones, that much. But that's just my general feeling. And maybe that's because I prefer the general look of just base wash highlight a little bit, maybe. But I like contrast too. But yeah, that's a nice enough tip. JD, anything from you?
I don't know if it's so much a tip as like just a mindset thing, but try out advanced techniques, no matter how good or bad you think you are at painting. Just give it a go, because chances are it'll work. And if it doesn't work, you can identify why it didn't. Like, it took me so long to get into... doing gradients and blending and all that kind of stuff, and I still don't do it anywhere near as much as I'd like to. But it's not as hard as it looks. Just go for it, just try it. Because if you don't, I think there's a worry of like, hey, here you go, here'd be my tip. You can always paint over it. it's fine. I think that's the biggest thing, is that I still get it now sometimes, where if I go over the lines, I get really annoyed. It's fine. Doesn't matter. Because either you've gone over the lines in a place that nobody's ever going to bloody see, so it doesn't matter anyway, or you can just paint over it. It's not, you know, a colouring
book. When it comes to painting, where if you go over the lines, it's fucked. There's no such thing as a permanent error.
You can just put more paint on. It's absolutely fine. So yeah, try it. I mean, I tried to do some OSL on, you know, the Underworld warband, Hexbane's Hunters, the Witch Hunter dudes. I tried to do some OSL on the leader of that with his like flaming torch. Didn't work at all. Looked like complete shit. So I just painted over it, and you can't tell. You can't tell that there was ever a mistake there. Just paint over it.
When it comes to painting, there's no such thing as a permanent error.
Exactly, yeah.
In the worst case scenario, you can strip a model.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And if you're abiding by the doing thin-ish coats, it doesn't even have to be thin, like super thin, you can paint over it. It's fine. Yeah. I think mine is finish your models. And finish units.
Good tip.
And this is going all the way back to when I first started, like when I was a kid. I would just never finish any units. I would paint one model from the unit and I'd paint it and then I'd go and buy something else. And now I'm not going to say I'm some kind of amazing angel and I can do that as an adult. In fact, I don't. But the satisfaction of completing a unit. I know that I should. And when I do it, it feels good. And that's how I got through so much AdMech, and that's how I like feel about my custodies now, is that I just know if I highlight all of that gold and I just do the blue on the lightning on their things, they're done. And that's a really good feeling to say, rather than I finished a model, like saying I finished a unit. And it doesn't even have to be like to a quote unquote standard, like working through a unit. Sometimes like I'm going to do all the base coats, I'm going to do all the washes, I'm going to do all the contrasts, I'm going to do all the highlights, and now they're done, is actually a really satisfying way to get something done, even if that's each of those stages is a little bit messy, or even each of those stages isn't too heavy metal standards or the standard that you might be holding yourself to. It's still a playable thing on the battlefield then, and you have completed something, and then the next step is just do it again until we're all out of money and we're dead.
I agree. I mean, counterintuitively, part of the reason that I liked painting my knight so much, and why I decided to do a full knight army, is because you get the satisfaction of finishing a unit and a model. And it's one of the quickest things I've painted, honestly, was my Knight Crusader, because it's so big that it doesn't. You just put the color on. You just put the color on, and it's fine. And it's there. You go. It's done. I think maybe another like addenda tip, like a little additional tip: paint big models. Painting big models is great. Because don't be intimidated by them, because they're actually a lot of the time easier to paint than units, because you paint the one model and it's done, and it's just also, it's fun.
I've often found that it just doesn't take that long to do big models, like compared to what you might expect in your head.
Yeah, exactly.
Particularly if they're all one color as well, like a Space Marine tank or
I am a big, big fan of painting models that are mostly one colour. That is my favourite thing to do with painting.
And that is a lot of what GW's like basic schemes are as well. Is like they choose one colour and they choose one like complementary colour for it, and that's why they work, is that it's not much. And then details don't take any time at all when it's just pouches and gemstones, even though people get quite intimidated by gemstones. Like, in the day and age of contrast, like, hot tip for green gemstones, put waystone or whatever it is, warp stone on it, then get your thumb and then jam your thumb on top of it, and then you've highlighted your thing.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, cool, there we go. Advice to our past selves, which we will
more
probably...
tips that you can shake a stick at.
Oh yeah, this is the real meat of the podcast now, an hour and 20 in. Okay, next question. Father time has come for you. Before your eyesight fades and your hand trembles too much, you have time for one more mini to paint. This will be your magnus opus. I don't think that's supposed to
that's
be
that's got to be a reference.
That's got to be a reference.
Magnus the Red.
I get it now. this will be your legacy. What mini would you paint or will you paint?
I mean, I'm not a big fan of the concept of death, so I'm going to paint whatever takes the maximum amount of time, frankly. so I can delay the inevitable.
Your fully custom-built Imperator Titan.
Yeah, my 1-to-1 scale Imperator Titan that I'm painting with a size 1 brush.
What's the?
And I can't die until it's finished.
What's the film where the guy plays chess with death?
Yeah.
I imagine
seventh
that.
Seal. From the 20s, yeah, seventh seal, yeah.
I imagine it's you and death sat at a painting table in a local GW just achingly slowly dragging a tiny brush across a Titan.
Across the leg of something that's like
don't take if you, take the brush off the model you've committed to that stroke.
I'm just pleased to say that I've achieved functional immortality from this question.
I have no idea what I would paint if it was if someone told me you can only ever paint one more model. I mean, models which I own. I have the lion still unpainted. I think I would just paint that and that would be it. Be done with that. Like, it's a nice model. It looks cool. And I would paint it as well as I could. And then I guess I die.
Wild.
So I wonder if we could just ask for like one game with them as well before we go.
Yeah, then you can at least revel in this.
I was thinking of adding that caveat onto my answer. Because
have a game with it, please.
My answer is Archaon. I've got Archaon fully assembled in his own massive, really useful box in my cupboard. And I'm not going to get to paint him for quite a long time because I've got other stuff to do. And it's a very nice model. Just generally, so I feel like if this is going to be my great work, my magnus opus, then I want it to be that, basically. But I want to play a game with him, and I want the role to go off where he gets to kill somebody with Slayer of Kings.
And then you can die.
And then I can die. Yeah, then I can diminish.
You're eager for this bit, James. What the hell?
Listen, we all got to go sometime.
Yeah, so. But it can be later.
It could be later. Yeah. Cool. Well, let's finish up with the question from QAnon.
Is the storm, in fact, upon us?
Yeah. I'm hungry for pizza now.
Wait, is that you saying that for real or because of Pizzagate?
Well, I was thinking about Pizzagate, but now I actually am thinking about pizza.
No, you just want pizza. I mean, it's fair.
This is the future that liberals want.
Some pizza.
Reading War Games Illustrated this morning, someone talked about stopping a project because someone else they knew was also doing it. This made me think of projects that I haven't done as to not clash with someone else. Have you ever done this? And if so, with what projects? It's quite a deep question for us to end on.
It is, I think. Okay, so I understand to a point. I understand the feeling of like, oh, I don't want to do the same as somebody else. I really do get it. At the same time, I suppose it depends what the scope of this question is, really. Because if it's in the scope of GW games, for example, you're pulling from quite a limited pool of available factions. Somebody in the world will be doing the same as you, and chances are somebody you know, if you're in a community, will be doing the same as you. So I think actually stopping a project like that you've started because somebody's doing the same as you is a bit cracked, honestly. Like when we got into Heresy 2.0 and we were all gripped by that particular fever, I ended up doing the same army as Wilkes and doing Raven Guard, but we both took it in different directions. Like, well, he actually finished his to a greater or lesser extent.
That's the different direction.
Well, he decided that he liked the setting so much that he was willing to put up with the god awful rules, whereas I didn't.
I don't think Wilkes even dislikes the rules that much.
You're sicko.
No.
But if you
reason
know,
for that, it's not that bad.
But then I suppose if you talk, I get it. If you're talking about like the weird, super niche historicals where like five people in the world play it and three of them wrote it, then I understand. Like, you know, you can't turn up with your Napoleonic Austrians to fight your mates of Napoleonic Austrians. You know what I mean? Well, you could. Also, you could. Yeah. I kind of think you could.
It depends how much that matters to you, right?
Like, sure.
My reaction to all this is always, fuck it, do what you want to do.
Yeah, agreed.
Yes.
Especially because you're going to be spending a lot of time and money on, you know, this project, this hobby that you're engaging with. And if you're giving up the thing that you really want to do in favour of something that you want to do less because of, you know, some perceived vibe clash, I think that is going to come back and bite you. On the other hand, if you're somebody for whom like fighting the quote-unquote correct opponent is really important to your enjoyment, maybe that is something that you can cope with.
No, sure.
So I
yeah.
think it really does depend.
Yeah, there's so much stuff in like, what if the army which is left over is a color you hate painting?
Right.
What if the army which is left over doesn't have rules that you like? Like,
what
I'm
if
sure
you have to paint Lamenters logo loads?
What if you have to paint Lamenters? What if you have to paint Imperial Fists? What if you have to paint, I don't know, Word Bearers, and someone else has got Blood Angels, or you've already got Blood Angels, so you don't want to do another red army? It's yeah. I understand.
I can tell you exactly what the answer to that is in my specific instance, which is you should paint about five different armies in red for some stupid reason.
See, this is the thing. I come down in the position of right. So
that's
so
terrible judgment.
Where does it end? Right, because if you don't pick your first choice because you find out somebody else is doing it, what if someone's doing your second choice? What if someone's doing your third choice? What if someone's doing your fourth choice? How far do you go down to the point where you're collecting an army or painting a project that you don't even like that much?
Right.
To, for the sake yeah. of what? To not clash with somebody? Who cares? Like, I get it. You, like you say, Pete, it's down to personal preference. I understand that, but like I said, I think that's my question really, is where
my
does
my personal attitude is exactly the same as yours. Like, as the main character of the universe, the only thing that matters is my decision.
I think there is something in, like, particularly maybe going towards, like, the heresy, where if a community is all getting into the heresy at once, and, like, you do want to feel like every legion is represented, and, like,
or at least maybe not having, like, oh, you know, 10 of us are getting into this and 9 of us are picked loyalists. Maybe that would be something you'd want to avoid.
Yeah, and I think like that kind of actually was a little bit of my thinking through like when heresy was that thing that whole year ago.
Shitloads of loyalist players because everyone's really boring.
Yeah, but it was also like that, like I'm going to bring this into it just to hit all of the bingo slots. As a vegan, I don't like that many choices. And it really upsets me, the number of choices that are now available to me. So it just
this isn't
makes
why I chose this lifestyle.
So when I'm having an argument with someone about animal rights, it's very confusing for them. However, genuinely, I don't like having that many choices. So like when Heresy came out, so to bring it back on track, was the, like, okay, loads of people are doing loyalists. I can't choose from 18 things, but if I say I'm going to do a traitor legion, that reduces my scope and
yes.
gives me a bit of a chance to actually get a little bit more in depth about the things that I want to do. And I still do love the just as planned lore of Alpha Legion. I think
yeah.
it's funny. I think it's a really shit stick. Like shtick, but
yes.
it's funny that you can blame everything as you meant to do it anyway.
fighting the Raven Guard off with a shitty shtick.
Yeah. So, like, having restrictions allows some more choices to kind of be made is kind of my argument. So, that said, if someone else was doing Alpha Legion, or if someone else was doing Word Bearers, or if someone else was doing Mechanicum, give a fuck, really? Like, it's my choice to do those things, and the number of games I'm going to get of any system is going to be countable on both of my hands, mostly, unless it's one of the big games like 40k. And then you've got how many factions are there in 40k now? 28 or something? It's ridiculous.
I don't think it's that many, but it's a lot.
Yeah, and they're adding armies like Votan, and like each army has detachments now and different things.
Yes, when codexes start coming out, yeah.
So, like, there's room to do your own thing, even if you're doing the same army, air quotes.
Well, I think, yeah, that's the other thing, is, and I think JD touched on it, is like, you know, you may well do the same faction, but what does that mean on the tabletop? Like, one person might be running it. So, to take your Raven Guard example, one person might be doing that, you know, all jetpack assault thing, and somebody else might be doing a more traditional, like, vehicles and tactical squad sort of vibe. It might be completely different in practice.
Yeah. And look at, like, Dark Angels. There's, like, three armies in one Space
three
Marine.
Three armies in one.
Yeah, oh, it's yeah. like...
Or even more in the Heresy.
Yeah.
Six armies in one.
And so you can choose to focus on just, like, one bit, or you can do, like, a mixed one, or you can, like, say, oh, we're just Ravenwing today, or just Deathwing, or we're just, like, Fallen as well, so there's four in 40k and whatever.
It's Ladies' Night, it's Ravenwing Night.
Mm. So, yeah, do what you want. It's fine. Everyone, no one judges you for it. I know who you are, Anon. I'm talking to you.
Got him.
Cool. Let's wrap this up. We've been talking for a while. So, thank you for listening to the Tiny Plastic People podcast. It is the podcast of tinyplasticpeople.com. If you go there, you find us. You find our sister podcast, even, 3 and 2, which is hosted by Rich, Laura, and Chimp, and it is great. That is always good. You can sometimes find articles there, and you're soon to find some other fun stuff which will be on this podcast feed soon as well. I'm being vague because I haven't finished it yet. So go there. It will be good. You will enjoy it. So Pete, where can people find you on this very internet?
Find me on Instagram at FIYENYAA. Or get the heck on the Discord, because that's great and everyone's lovely.
Hell yeah. And you can find a link to the Discord on tinyplasticpeople.com. So
yeah.
Yes. I think you can. If there's not, I'll put it there before this starts, because I think that might be a thing I've forgotten to do. JD, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm also on Instagram as jd.paints.
Nice. And you can find me on Instagram as well as Alone Music UK. You can also find me on this new social network called Bliske, which
illegal
is. I mean, I've said it, but now I actually can't remember what I chose my username on. I'm probably Alone Music UK on that as well. And I'm also found on the Discord. You can email us at the podcast at thetinyplasticpeople@gmail.com. We like your questions. We like you saying nice things to us. We like you saying, well, we don't like you saying nasty things to us. And we'll probably ignore them.
but it is, as of yet, you're right.
But yeah.
Until I get my way.
Until we get, yeah, until we crown Pete. Yeah, I think that's about it for this episode. Like and subscribe or something. Give us a review or something. That's always fun.
You can hit the bell. That'd hit that nice. Like button.
Oh,
tell your friends
windmill
about
slam.
It.
Tell your friends. If you don't tell your friends, we'll be sad, actually. So, there you go. All right. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Have fun with gaming.
Gaming.
Gaming.